Chapter 6. For a sensible sailor man with a few pounds to step in and save that fool from the consequences of his folly, it was his craze to quarrel with his captains. He had had some really good men too, who would have been too glad to stay if he would only let them. But no, he seemed to think he was no owner unless he was kicking somebody out in the morning and having a row with the new man in the evening. What was wanted for him was a master with a couple of hundred or so to take an interest in the ship on proper conditions. You don't discharge a man for no fault, only because of the fun of telling him to pack up his traps and go ashore, when you know that in that case you are bound to buy back his share. On the other hand, a fellow with an interest in the ship is not likely to throw up his job in a huff about a trifle. He had told Massey that. He had said, "This won't do, Mr. Massey. We are getting very sick of you here in the Marine Office. What you must do now is to try whether you could get a sailor to join you as partner. That seems to be the only way." Apostrophe and that was sound advice, Harry. Captain Wally, leaning on his stick, was perfectly still all over, and his hand, arrested in the act of striking, grasped his whole beard. And what did the fellow say to that? The fellow had the audacity to fly out at the master attendant. He had received the advice in a most impudent manner. "Didn't come here to be laughed at," he had shrieked. "Appeal to you as an Englishman, and a shipowner brought to the verge of ruin by an illegal conspiracy of your beggarly sailors, and all you condescend to do for me is to tell me to go and get a partner." The fellow had presumed to stamp with rage on the floor of the private office. Where was he going to get a partner? Was he being taken for a fool? Not a single one of that contemptible lot ashore at the Ohm had twopence in his pocket to bless himself with. The very native curs in the bazaar knew that much. And it's true enough, Harry, rumbled Captain Elliot judicially. "They are much more likely one, and all to owe money to the Chinaman in denim road for the clothes on their backs." "Well, apostrophe," said I, "you make too much noise over it for my taste, Mr. Massey. Good morning." Apostrophe, he banged the door after him. He dared to bang my door, confound his cheek. The head of the Marine Department was out of breath with indignation. Then recollecting himself, as it were, "I'll end by being late to dinner yarning with you here. Wife doesn't like it." He clambered ponderously into the trap, leaned out sideways, and only then wondered wheezily what on earth Captain Wally could have been doing with himself of late. They had had no sight of each other for years and years till the other day, when he had seen him unexpectedly in the office. What on earth? Captain Wally seemed to be smiling to himself in his white beard. "The earth is big," he said vaguely. The other, as if to test the statement, stared all around from his driving seat. The Esplanade was very quiet. Only from afar, from very far, a long way from the seashore, across the stretches of grass, through the long ranges of trees, came faintly the toot-toot-toot of the cable car beginning to roll before the empty peristyle of the public library on its 3-mile journey to the new harbor docks. "Doesn't seem to be so much room on it," growled the master attendant, "since these Germans came along shouldering us at every turn. It was not so in our time." He fell into deep thought, breathing stertorously, as though he had been taking a nap open-eyed. Perhaps he too, on his side, had detected in the silent pilgrim-like figure, standing there by the wheel, like an arrested wayfarer, the buried lineaments of the features belonging to the young captain of the Condor. Good fellow Harry Wally, never very talkative. You never knew what he was up to, a bit too offhand with people of consequence, and apt to take a wrong view of a fellow's actions. Fact was, he had a too good opinion of himself. He would have liked to tell him to get in and drive him home to dinner. But one never knew. Wife would not like it. "And it's funny to think, Harry," he went on in a big, Subdued drone, that of all the people on it there seems only you and I left to remember this part of the world as it used to be. Dot, he was ready to indulge in the sweetness of a sentimental mood, had it not struck him suddenly that Captain Wally, unstirring and without a word, seemed to be awaiting something perhaps expecting. Dot dot he gathered the reins at once, and burst out in bluff, hearty growls, "Ha! My dear boy! The men we have known, the ships we've sailed, eh? And the things we've done!" Dot, the pony plunged, the size skipped out of the way. Captain Wally raised his arm. Goodbye. Why, the sun had set. And when, after drilling a deep hole with his stick, he moved from that spot, the night had massed its army of shadows under the trees. They filled the eastern ends of the avenues, as if only waiting the signal for a general advance upon the open spaces of the world. They were gathering low between the deep stone-faced banks of the canal. The Malay praw, half concealed under the arch of the bridge, had not altered its position a quarter of an inch. For a long time Captain Wally stared down over the parapet, till at last the floating immobility of that beshrouded thing seemed to grow upon him into something inexplicable and alarming. The twilight abandoned the zenith, its reflected gleams left the world below, and the water of the canal seemed to turn into pitch. Captain Wally crossed it. The turning to the right, which was his way to his hotel, was only a very few steps farther. He stopped again. All the houses of the seafront were shut up, the quayside was deserted, but for one or two figures of natives walking in the distance, and began to reckon the amount of his bill. So many days in the hotel at so many dollars a day. To count the days he used his fingers. Plunging one hand into his pocket, he jingled a few silver coins. All right for 3 days more, and then, unless something turned up, he must break into the 500 ivies money invested in her father. It seemed to him that the first meal coming out of that reserve would choke him for certain. Reason was of no use. It was a matter of feeling. His feelings had never played him false. He did not turn to the right. He walked on, as if there still had been a ship in the roadstead to which he could get himself pulled off in the evening. Far away, beyond the houses, on the slope of an indigo promontory closing the view of the quays, the slim column of a factory chimney smoked quietly straight up into the clear air. A Chinaman, curled down in the stern of one of the half dozen sampans floating off the end of the jetty, caught sight of a beckoning hand. He jumped up, rolled his pigtail round his head swiftly, tucked into rapid movements his wide dark trousers high up his yellow thighs, and by a single, noiseless, fin-like stir of the oars, sheered the sampan alongside the steps with the ease and precision of a swimming fish. "Sofala," articulated Captain Wally from above, and the Chinaman, a new emigrant probably, stared upwards with a tense attention, as if waiting to see the queer word fall visibly from the white man's lips. "Sofala," Captain Wally repeated, and suddenly his heart failed him. He paused. The shores, the islets, the high ground, the low points, were dark. The horizon had grown somber. And across the eastern sweep of the shore the white obelisk, marking the landing place of the telegraph cable, stood like a pale ghost on the beach before the dark spread of uneven roofs, intermingled with palms, of the native town. Captain Wally began again. "Sofala. Savi Sofala, John." This time the Chinaman made out that bizarre sound, and grunted his assent uncouthly, low down in his bare throat. With the first yellow twinkle of a star, that appeared like the head of a pin stabbed deep into the smooth, pale, shimmering fabric of the sky, the edge of a keen chill seemed to cleave through the warm air of the earth. At the moment of stepping into the sampan to go and try for the command of the Sofala, Captain Wally shivered a little. When on his return he landed on the quay again, Venus, like a choice jewel set low on the hem of the sky, cast a faint gold trail behind him upon the roadstead, as level as a floor made of one dark and polished stone. The lofty vaults of the avenues were black, all black overhead, and the porcelain globes on the lampposts resembled egg-shaped pearls, gigantic and luminous, displayed in a row whose farther end seemed to sink in the distance, down to the level of his knees. He put his hands behind his back. He would now consider calmly the discretion of it, before saying the final word tomorrow. His feet scrunched the gravel loudly the discretion of it. It would have been easier to appraise, had there been a workable alternative. The honesty of it was indubitable. He meant well by the fellow, and periodically his shadow leaped up instants by his side on the trunks of the trees, to lengthen itself, oblique and dim, far over the grass repeating his stride. The discretion of it. Was there a choice? He seemed already to have lost something of himself, to have given up to a hungry specter something of his truth and dignity in order to live. But his life was necessary. Let poverty do its worst in exacting its toll of humiliation. It was certain that Ned Elliott had rendered him, without knowing it, a service for which it would have been impossible to ask. He hoped Ned would not think there had been something underhand in his action. He supposed that now, when he heard of it, he would understand, or perhaps he would only think Wally an eccentric old fool. What would have been the good of telling him any more than of blurting the whole tale to that man Massey? £500 ready to invest. Let him make the best of that. Let him wonder. You want a captain, I want a ship. That's enough. Brrrr, what a disagreeable impression that empty, dark, echoing steamer had made upon him. A laid-up steamer was a dead thing and no mistake. A sailing ship somehow seems always ready to spring into life with the breath of the incorruptible heaven. But a teamer, thought Captain Wally, with her fires out, without the warm whiffs from below meeting you on her decks, without the hiss of steam, the clangs of iron in her breast lies there as cold, and still and pulseless as a corpse. In the solitude of the avenue, all black above and lighted below, Captain Wally, considering the discretion of his course, met, as it were incidentally, the thought of death. He pushed it aside with dislike and contempt. He almost laughed at it, and in the unquenchable vitality of his age only thought with a kind of exultation how little he needed to keep body and soul together. Not a bad investment for the poor woman, this solid carcass of her father. And for the rest, in case of anything, the agreement should be clear. The whole 500, to be paid back to her integrally within 3 months. Integrally. Every penny. He was not to lose any of her money, whatever else had to go, a little dignity, some of his self-respect. He had never before allowed anybody to remain under any sort of false impression as to himself. Well, let that go for her sake. After all, he had never said anything misleading, and Captain Wally felt himself corrupt to the marrow of his bones. He laughed a little with the intimate scorn of his worldly prudence. Clearly, with a fellow of that sort, and in the peculiar relation they were to stand to each other, it would not have done to blurt out everything. He did not like the fellow. He did not like his spells of fawning loquacity and bursts of resentfulness. In the end, a poor devil. He would not have liked to stand in his shoes. Men were not evil, after all. He did not like his sleek hair, his queer way of standing at right angles, with his nose in the air, and glancing along his shoulder at you. No. On the whole, men were not bad, they were only silly or unhappy. Captain Wally had finished considering the dissertation of that step, and there was the whole long night before him. In the full light his long beard would glisten like a silver breastplate covering his heart. In the spaces between the lamps his burly figure passed less distinct, loomed very big, wandering, and mysterious. No, there was not much real harm in men. And all the time a shadow marched with him, slanting on his left hand, which in the east is a presage of evil. Can you make out the clump of palms yet, Sarang? Asked Captain Wally from his chair on the bridge of the Cephala approaching the bar of Batu Beru. No, Tuan. By and by, see. The old Malay, in a blue dungaree suit, planted on his bony dark feet under the bridge awning, put his hands behind his back, and stared ahead out of the innumerable wrinkles at the corners of his eyes. Captain Wally sat still, without lifting his head to look for himself. 3 years 36 times. He had made these palms 36 times from the south ward. They would come into view at the proper time. Thank God, the old shipmate courses and distances. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.